Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The reason why you have crime that has spiraled out of control in so many of these different areas is because you have politicians putting woke ideology ahead of public safety.
Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was in Chicago Monday to address Chicago's police union, which has endorsed one of the nine Democrats running for mayor in next Tuesday's pivotal Chicago election. We'll look at how the candidates are addressing public safety and much more with Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago, Black Studies professor Barbara Ransby, and retired Illinois Congressmember Luis Gutierrez. We'll also speak with longtime Chicago activist Frank Chapman about how the Chicago police murder of Black Panther leader Fred Hampton in 1969 is linked to a measure on next Tuesday's ballot in Chicago that establishes community control of the police through local police councils. And it was 58 years ago today, Malcolm X was assassinated at the Audubon Ballroom in Harlem.
The history of unpunished violence against our people clearly indicates that we must be prepared to defend ourselves, or we will continue to be a defenseless people at the mercy of a ruthless and violent racist mob.
We'll look at the life and legacy of Malcolm X with renowned activist and scholar Dr. Angela Davis. She's giving a keynote address tonight at the Shabazz Center, which is the site of the Audubon Ballroom where Malcolm X was gunned down 58 years ago. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Turkey, at least six people were killed Monday as two powerful earthquakes shook the southern province of Hatay. The magnitude 6.3 and 5.8 quakes were felt across Turkey's border region into northern Syria, sparking panic among survivors of two even more massive quakes earlier this month, which killed more than 47,000 people in both countries, a toll that's certain to rise in the days and weeks ahead. On Monday, Istanbul's mayor warned about 90,000 buildings are at risk of collapse if a massive earthquake were to strike Turkey's largest city. Meanwhile, a convoy of trucks carrying humanitarian aid crossed Turkey's Bab al-Hawa border, a crossing into Syria Monday, 2 days after the head of the World Food Program criticized Syrian authorities for blocking access to the area. Aid workers say they're now contending with a shortage of tents for thousands of Syrians in need.
The United Nations and relief agencies have not reached us. In shelters, there are some 200 or 300 families, but we cannot secure tents for them. And if there are tents available, their prices have doubled.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has promised to withdraw from the New START Treaty, the last remaining nuclear arms control agreement between the United States and Russia. Putin made the pledge during his annual State of the Nation address earlier today, where he gave no sign Russia's preparing to end the war in Ukraine. Putin accused Western nations of provoking the conflict.
The Western elites do not conceal their goals. As they say, it's a direct quote, to bring Russia a strategic defeat. What does that mean for us? It means to end us once and for all. It means they plan to turn a local conflict into a global confrontation. We understand it exactly like that. We will react to it accordingly. This is because, in this case, it is about the very existence of our country.
Meanwhile, President Biden is in Warsaw, Poland today, where he's giving a major address on U.S. support for Ukraine ahead of the first anniversary of Russia's invasion Friday. Biden's also meeting with leaders of the nine countries on NATO's eastern flank, including Polish President Andrzej Duda. Biden's trip to Poland comes a day after he announced a half-billion dollars $1 billion worth of additional U.S. weaponry for Ukraine during a surprise visit to Kyiv, Ukraine. The French army has left Burkina Faso, officially ending its military operation in the West African country less than a month after leaders asked France to withdraw its contingent of hundreds of troops. Their departure marks a significant step in scaling down France's military presence in Africa's Sahel region. Protesters had long denounced a 2018 military accord that allowed French soldiers to fight armed groups in Burkina Faso, saying France's army had done little to actually tackle violence that's engulfed the country in recent years.
We don't want them on our territory because when they are here and our people die, they do nothing. If they stay beyond the exit date, authorities should expect us in their base because we are going to go there.
The medical humanitarian group Doctors Without Borders has suspended its work in Burkina Faso after armed assailants killed two staff members earlier this month. In Mexico, at least 17 asylum seekers were killed in a bus crash in the state of Puebla Sunday afternoon. Most of them came from Venezuela, Colombia, and Central America. The bus was carrying 45 passengers when it turned over on the highway as it headed north toward Mexico City. This comes just days after a bus carrying 66 U.S.-bound migrants plunged off a cliff in Panama last week, killing at least 39 people, including children. Rights groups warn Cambodia is ratcheting up its crackdown on free speech and human rights after Prime Minister Hun Sen ordered one of Cambodia's last independent news organizations to shut down last week. He accused the outlet, Voice of Democracy, of attacking him and his son, who's also presumed successor. This is South Winith, media director at Voice of Democracy.
They feel like VOD has been playing a key role or important role in Cambodia in bringing the voice to the voiceless and also vulnerable people, and by bringing all the issues to the government. So without VOD, we just afraid that this could be a big step back or press freedom in Cambodia.
In Iraq, prominent environmentalist Jassim al-Assadi was released last week, 2 weeks after he was kidnapped near Baghdad. The motivation for his abductions remains unclear. The Goldman Prize-winning activist is head of the group Nature Iraq, which fights for the protection of Iraq's southern wetlands as they face increasing challenges due to the climate crisis. In Ohio, one person was killed and 12 others injured Monday as a large explosion tore through a metal factory outside Cleveland, shattering windows, scattering debris around the site, setting vehicles on fire. Residents of Oakwood Village reported a scent like burning oil after the explosion, which sent a huge plume of smoke billowing into the sky. Records from the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, show the factory's operator, I. Schumann and Company, was recently cited in several complaints. In one instance, a worker suffered third-degree burns. In another case, OSHA cited the company for a serious violation over its control of hazardous energy. Meanwhile, the Ohio Department of Health is opening a health clinic today for residents of East Palestine who've reported health effects, including headaches, sore throats, and respiratory problems following the February 3rd derailment of a Norfolk Southern train. The crash led to a massive fire and release of toxic chemicals, including vinyl chloride. The head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Michael Regan, is headed back to East Palestine today. His trip comes as Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg is coming under fire for not visiting the crash site. Buttigieg told reporters Monday, quote, "When the time is right, I do plan to visit East Palestine. I don't have a date for you right now," Buttigieg said. To see our coverage of the Ohio rail disaster, go to democracynow.org. Students at Michigan State University returned to classes Monday, 1 week after a gunman's rampage left three students dead and five others critically wounded. Many MSU students and faculty reported they weren't ready to resume classes and need more time to heal. Meanwhile, hundreds of students and their supporters gathered at the Michigan State Capitol Monday for a sit-in protest demanding Michigan legislature put new limits on guns. This is MSU senior Maha Kangra.
I texted my family, friends, and loved ones for what I thought would be the last time ever. The Wi-Fi and data kept going in and out, and for every minute over 4 hours, I thought I was gonna die. I didn't think I was gonna make it out alive anymore. While I'm standing here before you today, lucky to be alive, I should not be lucky to be alive. The right to bear arms should have never come before our right to live. And my life matters more than guns.
And journalism's prestigious George Polk Awards have been announced. Among the 2022 winners is former Democracy Now! Producer Sharif Abdelkaddous, a reporter for the independent Egyptian outlet Matamasser. Sharif won the Foreign Television Award for the killing of Shireen Abu Akla, along with senior producer Kavitha Shakur and executive producer Leila Al-Aryan. The remarkable documentary investigates the killing of Palestinian-American journalist and longtime Al Jazeera correspondent Shireen Abu Akla by Israeli forces last May during a raid in the occupied West Bank. It draws on videos and eyewitness accounts of Abu Akla's killing to establish that she was fatally shot in the head by an Israeli sniper, a finding supported by numerous other press investigations. Shireen Abu Akla and other reporters were wearing blue helmets and blue flak jackets, clearly emblazoned with the word press. Sharif Abdelkaddous and Leila Al-Aryan were working for Al Jazeera's fault lines. To see our interview with Sharif Abdelkaddous and Lina Abu Akla, niece of Shireen Abu Akla, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, an expected 2024 presidential aspirant, was in Chicago Monday to address Chicago's police union, which has endorsed one of the nine Democrats running for mayor in next Tuesday's pivotal Chicago election. We'll look at how the candidates are addressing public safety and much more in a minute.
I just want to ask a question. Save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time.
There'll come a time
when the world won't be singing.
When the world won't be singing.
Flowers won't grow.
Children by Devon Gilfillian, Jamila Woods, and Jason Eskridge. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, and in Chicago, Juan Gonzalez will be joining us in a minute. We begin today's show in Chicago, where a key mayoral race is just a week away on Tuesday, February 28th. Voters are being courted by nine Democratic candidates. But on Monday, Republican Governor Ron DeSantis waded into the race from Florida when he gave a speech in the Chicago suburbs at an event hosted by the Chicago Fraternal Order of Police.
The reason why you have crime that has spiraled out of control in so many of these different areas is because you have politicians putting woke ideology ahead of public safety.
Chicago's Democratic mayoral candidates tried to distance themselves from DeSantis, including Paul Vallas, who's endorsed by the Chicago Fraternal Order of Police. He's the former superintendent of Chicago Public Schools. Also running for mayor, incumbent Mayor Lori Lightfoot, Congressmember Chuy Garcia, Cook County Commissioner Brandon Johnson, and businessman Willie Wilson. Next Tuesday's election is an off-cycle election, and voter turnout could be low. If there's no clear majority, two candidates will go to a runoff election on April 4th. For more, we go to Chicago, where we're joined by two guests. Luis Gutierrez is a former Democratic Congress member from Illinois. He served from 1993 until his retirement in 2019 and was a member of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. He was also a member of the Chicago City Council from 1986 until his election to Congress. We should note that he is supporting Chuy Garcia. Also with us is Barbara Ransby, historian, author, and activist who's supporting Johnson. Ransby is a professor of Black Studies, Gender and Women's Studies, and History at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Her latest book is Making All Black Lives Matter, Reimagining Freedom in the 21st Century. Her recent piece for Truthout is headlined, Ron DeSantis' Attack on Black Studies is Textbook Proto-Fascism. We welcome you both back to Democracy Now! Barbara Ransby, let's begin with you. Can you talk about why this Chicago mayoral race is important for people to understand all over the country? What's at stake?
Yeah. Thank you for having me, Amy, and thank you for covering the DeSantis issue, because that's an important one, too. You know, Chicago's at a crossroads. The Chicago is a city historically steeped in racism, deeply divided by both race and class. We've had some pretty awful mayors over the years, and it's been a site of police violence and torture for many years, and communities have been traumatized by that. This mayoral election, we have an opportunity to have a truly progressive candidate, truly progressive mayor. And that opens possibilities for our movements in Chicago in ways that we have not seen in a very long time. I would say, you know, it's a complicated race. There's nine people in it, and some of their demands do overlap. Some of their platforms do overlap. But one of the reasons I'm supporting Brandon Johnson, and I supported Chuy last time, and Chuy does come out of progressive movements, but Brandon is the movement candidate in this election. He is supported by the leftists in the city council, from Rosana Rodriguez to Byron Lopez, Sigil Lopez, and others, and the fighting unions in this town. You know, the unions have, the teachers' unions all over the country have been an inspiration, but Chicago Teachers' Union has been a particular inspiration, and that's the movement that Brandon comes out of, protege of Karen Lewis. So, and then most importantly, I've really been won over by young grassroots organizers, Black and Brown, the kids who were in the streets to protest Laquan McDonald's murder, who have been marching and demanding jobs, demanding attention to neglected and abandoned communities. They have been marching in the streets, sit-ins at City Hall over the years. And this cycle, they are knocking on doors and phone banking for Brandon Johnson. So to have a candidate that comes out of movement, committed to movement, accountable to movement, and who can speak to and excite young Black and Brown people in this city, to me is a real opportunity to point Chicago in a different direction and to not have it be the place where rogue cops run the town and racist cops run the town and rich people feel comfortable and poor people are afraid. So that's why it's an important election, and we are hoping for a good outcome next week.
And former Congressmember Luis Gutierrez, it's great to see you again. You're supporting Chuy Garcia. Can you address why you are, neither of you are supporting the current mayor, Lori Lightfoot?
Sure. Well, we both supported Lori Lightfoot, as did the immense population in the city of Chicago, because we looked at her as a true reformer 4 years ago. She's turned out to be an abysmal failure. Abysmal failure because property taxes have skyrocketed in the city of Chicago. Crime has skyrocketed in the city of Chicago. And guess what? So has pollution in the Latino community. She said she was going to be against the asphalt company and then gave him a $50 million. She blew up a chimney in the middle of COVID, causing devastation and environmental hazards to our community that we still don't know. That's Lori Lightfoot. Jesus Garcia? Yes. Karen Lewis, 8 years ago, as she was dying of cancer, called Jesus Garcia and said, would you carry on the progressive movement, the president of the CTU? He's the same Jesus Garcia today, a progressive leader who has crisscrossed this country for Bernie Sanders. We all know that he's a national spokesperson for him. We know where he's at on immigration. We know where he's at on crime. We know where he's at on income inequality. And as Harold used to teach us, both Chewy and I, because we learned from him, the first progressive mayor of the city of Chicago, the first black mayor of the city of Chicago, where we built a coalition of black and white and Latinos. And I'm proud to say that Latinos, over 60% of us, in the general election in 1983 and subsequently in 1987, voted to build such a coalition. Who led that coalition? Jesus Chewy Garcia. Brendan Johnson's a great Cook County commissioner. He's been a Cook County commissioner for 4 years. Chewy's been a Cook County commissioner for 8 years, a state senator for 8 years, a member of Congress for 5 years, a city council member for 7 years. He has over 34 years of experience. He is the experienced candidate, and he can build coalitions as he has in the past. Now, addressing the issue of crime, I think we have to understand something. I don't go by the polls. I don't go by the rhetoric of the politicians. I go by speaking to people each and every day in their homes. Over 600 households I've sat in their homes speaking to them. They're afraid to go out and let their children play. They're afraid to do grocery shopping. They won't come downtown. It's not a psychosis that's occurring in the Latino community as I go out there and knock on doors in white communities and black communities. They are afraid. And we need to bring a leader to the city of Chicago that is going to free them from that. And Jesus Chewy Garcia is the one person who can finally make sure that policemen are held accountable to the highest standards when they go wrong. Laquan McDonald's, that will not go in vain. Laquan McDonald, he lived 17 precious years and they put 16 bullets into him. That should not happen in the city of Chicago. We're 7 times more likely if you're black to be shot by a Chicago police officer, 3 times more likely if you're Latino. We're going to hold them accountable, but at the same time, we're going to make sure that the community and the men and women that put on that blue uniform each day are speaking to each other, are fighting together to reestablish order in our community and to reestablish security in our community.
Juan Gonzalez is now joining us, Democracy Now! Co-host. And Juan, last week on February 8th, you co-hosted a mayoral forum with many of the candidates. And now this week, you have the backdrop of the presidential aspirant, not yet declared, Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis, coming to Chicago, addressing the Fraternal Order of Police, they are endorsing one of the candidates that's running in the Democratic race. Can you talk about, having moved from the East Coast to Chicago, why this is all so critical, Juan?
Well, obviously, you're talking about one of the largest cities in the nation, and the issues that are being raised here in the Chicago race are similar to many occurred in the New York mayoral race, that are occurring in many local races around the country. The issue of how progressive police accountability will occur, what will be the nature of the empowerment of local communities in their governance. So these are some of the similar issues that are playing here. But I wanted to ask Barbara, in all likelihood, unless the polls are way off, none of the 9 candidates, including the current mayor, will get a majority of the vote here in this first round. And your sense of clearly the business community is largely lining up behind Paul Vallis, the only white candidate of the 9 in the race. I'm wondering what your sense of, if depending on who ends up as the two two facing each other in a runoff, what kind will the progressive movement be still able to come together again if one of the progressive candidates ends up among the two?
I think, yes, we will. Look, we choose our candidate, the person who we think is the best person to move a progressive agenda at any given moment in time. And then we deal with the political reality in hand that we are dealt. None of us are going to vote and feel like our job is done. Whoever is elected, we're going to have to fight to hold them accountable. We're going to have to push them because they're going to be pushed on all sides. So I do think the movement will come together behind the most progressive candidate in a runoff. Paul Vallas is our worst nightmare. And, you know, the fact that DeSantis comes now, I think, has really lit a fire under some people who may have been less excited about voting in this cycle, although I think there is a lot of motivation and a lot of excitement, because I think he really shows us a kind of authoritarian future, a neo-fascist future. You know, he is reminding us of the worst case scenario of DeSantis that is. And of course, he's aligned with folks who are aligned with Paul Vallas. So I think we take that threat very seriously. But I do want to go back to this question of police and crime, right? We saw the largest mobilization in this country's history in 2020 after the murder of George Floyd. That was not an isolated incident. People feel terrorized in their homes, not just by crime, but also by what the police will do if they go out of their homes. What will happen to their sons and daughters if they're, you know, coming back from a party and get pulled over by police? You know, what will happen if police come and indiscriminately decide who's a criminal and who's not? So there are a lot of fears, and we have to have complex answers to complex problems, right? I mean, we all want simple solutions. We want push-button solutions. Cops sound like a good answer to people because that's what we've been socialized to listen for, but that is not a solution. And so what I'm looking to, you know, in this race and what we're all hoping for is a set of solutions from housing to jobs to de-escalation in our communities to viable schools that really give children, young people, alternatives. We're looking for all that. And whoever lands in the in City Hall in Chicago. But yes, we will unite around the most progressive candidate or the least harmful candidate when this thing settles. But we have higher hopes than that.
And Luis Gutierrez, I wanted to ask you, clearly Chuy Garcia is the only Latino official running in this race, yet some of the polls are indicating that he's not even registering majority support among the Latino electorate. I'm wondering your thoughts about that. Are the polls way off, or is the Latino community developed to the point where it doesn't matter whether you are the same ethnicity, they're looking at your political views and your perspectives primarily?
Sure, sure. Well, number one, WBEZ, NBC, Telemundo put out a poll 10 days ago showing Jesus Garcia in second place. He's always been in first and second place in every scientific poll, not survey. And he deserves to be there. And Juan, I don't know what the polls say, but I invite you to my home. Last night, I called a Latino woman. She's 72 years old. And you know what she told me? She said, tell Chuy, yo soy de él. I have never heard such an endorsement of a candidate. I am his. Yo soy de él. I wish people could understand the impact of those words and what they had on me. He's going to carry, let me just make it clear, when he ran against Rahm Emanuel, he carried the Latino community. Not only in the primary, in the first set of elections, as Dr. Lee has suggested, there's going to be a runoff. He carried it even more overwhelmingly in the runoff, and that was 8 years ago. Since then, he has stood up. And I just want to talk a little bit about progressive politics. Who is the progressive candidate in this race? There may be more than one, because I remember 1986, gay rights ordinance. Chuy and I had just arrived in the city council. The cardinal, Bernardy, the cardinal of the city of Chicago, threatened with excommunication. Chuy's Catholic. I'm Catholic. He comes from a community devoutly Catholic, and yet he voted for the gay rights ordinance. It was defeated because in 1986, we didn't have the power to pass it. We subsequently passed it in the Chicago City Council, and we've moved forward. Chewy has always been standing by women and reproductive rights. It has a history of doing that for 34 years as a Cook County Commissioner, as a state legislator, as a state senator, as a member of Congress. But he's also been for immigrant rights. And unfortunately, too many times,